I'm Chris Farrell from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper. We're the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor, Stargate Pioneer. My friends, they all call me SP. And your other reporters for this special episode, number 147 of the Starling Tribune, are Chris.
I hate the 80s.
Yeah, gotta follow that up by punching the radio. There you go. And Michelle.
1987. The halcyon days of Whitney Houston and Star Trek, The Next Generation.
There's nothing wrong with that. It was a great year. I loved 1987. Did you like 1987, Michelle?
Yeah, sure.
We'll run with that, right? I know Chris is too young. He wasn't even born then, so we'll just move on.
I was alive. I was 3.
This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, April 6th, 2017, live on Geeks.live. Tonight, we're going to be discussing an episode of Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, and over on the CW seed, Vixen and Constantine.
So just a friendly reminder that our discussions and speculations are probably going to be based off of a lot of information that the showrunners and actors have put out there via different interviews or convention appearances, things like that. So even if we throw out wild speculation based off what they've talked about, we might actually accidentally get something right and spoil people. So consider yourselves warned. There could be spoilers that we don't even know exist.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com. We can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the GunnaGeek Productions banner.
I'm ready to get into the topic tonight, so Michelle, why don't you break down this episode of Legends of Tomorrow for us?
Sure, the episode is called Compromised. It is Season 2, Episode 5. It originally aired Thursday, November 10th, 2016. Director David Geddes has directed two legends. Writers Kito Shimizu, 4 Legends, 11 Arrow, 1 Flash, and I had to throw this in here, writer of 7 episodes of The Cape, a show I watched every single show of it. And Grain Godfrey, who's done 6 Legends, 6 Flash, and 4 of The Tomorrow People.
So, Chris, you are a Cape fan yourself, aren't you?
No, I kept hoping it would get better, and I actually caught a bunch of flack for this from one of my co-hosts on another show, Naki, who's like, just quit, and I think it was episode 11 out of 13 I finally said, not even Keith David can save this show for me, and I quit. I should have quit around episode 3. It was so bad.
I didn't quit.
You went all the way through, right? That's like me and Heroes. I should have quit after season 1, and I went the whole way, including the last reboot of it, rebirth, whatever, of Heroes, that Chris was like, oh, this is going to be so good. I was like,
eh. No, I said it might be good, and it started out strong and then completely fell apart.
Completely.
Well, it took all of those great comic book shows in the past to get the awesome comic book shows that we have today. So thank you very much for sharpening your writing blades on The Cape and The Tomorrow People, Kato and Gran. So we're going to move on to ratings. And this aired way back in November 2016, as Michelle was saying. That same week, The Flash did not air, but Supergirl, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow aired. On Monday night, Supergirl achieved a rating of 2.47. Now remember, this is very shortly after their transition from CBS to CW. Over on CBS, they were getting somewhere between 5 and 7 every episode, down to 2.47, which actually is really good for the CW. It just hurt Supergirl to go down to that rating from CBS ratings. Over on Arrow, I bet this is one of the season high ratings. It was So It Begins, the episode name, and they achieved a rating of 1.95, which, looking at the season's ratings, I do believe was their highest for the entire... Oh, Invasion actually was the highest, which was the crossover. But the non-crossover events, it was the highest of. And then Legends of Tomorrow on Thursday night, back when it was airing on Thursday night, not Tuesday night after The Flash, it brought in, for Compromised, 1.77 million viewers. So, an okay week back in November for the CW. This episode was named Compromise, and we talk about the title all the time for the episodes that we talk about and what it means. So, Chris, what do you think Compromise means?
Well, everything gets screwed up when they time travel, so they're compromising the timeline, and this is another instance of time travel happens, everything gets jacked up, and we sort of have to try and fix it.
Michelle, do you agree?
Oh, completely agree. They're like bulls at a china shop at this stage. They just go in and they make the news because of the worst White House infiltration move ever. That wasn't really smart.
Okay, we need to talk a lot about that. So first of all, let's talk about the TV news. It was in 4:3. It wasn't in 16:9. It was in SD, wasn't in HD. So it was kind of funny watching the news screens back then. And also, let's talk a little bit about the White House, because the first time I saw it, I wasn't really paying that close attention to the inside of the White House. However, this time around, I did scrutinize it a little bit more. And I wish Neil was here, because I want to know what hotel they shot that hallway scene in, because they used the hallway scene for every scene inside the White House, and it was definitely a hotel White House.
Wait, you mean that wasn't at the White House?
No, it was not.
I heard that then President Barack Obama was a huge fan of Legends and let them film in the White House.
I mean, he was a total geek. Wouldn't, you know, I think he would have. Yeah.
You guys can believe whatever you want. It didn't happen. And there aren't those, I mean, there's not that, the steps aren't in there, the railings aren't in there, the elevators aren't right. It's just, no, it's not the same. No. And the glass, by the way, probably bulletproof. So there's probably no way that they can just throw a body out the window.
This was the secret White House, you see.
Oh, the secret. Well, you should have said the secret White House.
It's the one that you get through the tunnels. You take the tunnels, you go left. And then you go down a couple, and then you hang a right. There you go.
And you're there.
Tunnels left, hang a right, and you're there. All right. So Compromised, the biggest thing that I got from Compromised was the whole Stein versus Stein thing again, where he runs into himself again. It was interesting watching that happen, knowing what we know later on in the season what happens. And you didn't really realize the entire ramifications. And then also, this was one of Sarah's first times out of the box as a captain. She was really coming into her own, although she was sidetracked by Damian Dark. So a little bit of compromise of her position as captain as well.
She almost compromised it all by trying to kill him.
But then she let him go in order for him to suffer. And we see how well that works out eventually.
Yeah, not so well.
So, Michelle, why don't we talk about the fights? Because there were definitely some good fights here, and I've got a lot to say about some of the fights.
Well, the episode starts with Damian Dark with a drug deal. He, straight out of Miami Vice, Don Johnson, white jacket, the shades, the whole deal. And, of course, it goes south. And first, you think there's, because the DEA comes in, you're going to think there's big gunfight going to happen. Maybe he's going to use magic. Maybe he's got the magic, you know, or not. But no, Thawne just comes in and just basically either tosses everybody aside or breaks people's necks. So that was the quick fight.
It was. Did you notice the quote unquote cigar boat that they had for drug running back in Miami in the 80s? Did you not watch Miami Vice? Did you not see the cool boats?
Oh, It was literally like if I had a bingo card for Miami, it was like check, 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 check. They just needed the guy with the long pinky finger to taste the product. That was the only thing they were missing.
I'm guessing the bridge in the background must have been the one raised bridge by a dock in the entire Vancouver area. And again, I wish Neil was on here to tell us exactly where that scene was shot, because that is pretty much how Miami goes. You got the elevated causeways and you have all the docks that are everywhere. So they were trying to simulate that. I doubt they took the entire gang down there to Miami just to shoot that one scene. So
where was Michael Weston and Sam Axe during all of this? I mean, if they're in Miami, you'd assume those guys are.
You're talking about Burn Notice, and that's one of my favorite shows ever. It did have a couple of seasons that dragged on, but overall, it was just a fun show to watch. And I believe it was on was it on USA or TNT?
It was on USA Network. So brief aside, one of the guys I work with in my real life job, because sadly podcasting is not my job, he and I came up with a way to try and make Burn Notice crossover with Arrow just because we wanted to have Sam Axe hanging out with John Diggle.
That would be awesome.
And be like, can you believe these guys?
Oh, gosh. And have Sharon Gless on there in the Arrow Cave. Oh, gosh.
See? Just imagine right now the possibilities. If anyone's listening from either the CW or from USA, I have ideas. You can tweet me and I'll give you my ideas for free to make this crossover happen, because it would be amazing.
You know what? Sharon Glass would be smoking in the Arrow Cave. She would have to, and she'd be trying to hide it in a pot or something. She couldn't find it, so she would like go into Oliver's cabinet of special drugs from Leon Yu and put it in there and then set off some sort of explosive. It would be fun. Oh, that entire gang from Burn Notice needs to be on this show. That would be an awesome episode. I mean, we've already had people from Ben Browder, from Stargate, and from Farscape, and why not? That'd be awesome. Oh,
that's what I'm saying. Just let's make it happen. Come on, guys. I'll give you the ideas for free. You just gotta reach out to me.
So there were a couple of scenes in the White House and a couple of fights in the White House. Imagine that. You go in, you steal some jelly beans, and then you have a fight. That's how it works.
Yeah, sounds fair.
No, I thought it was funny because Rory is trying to help Ray and himself by making Ray his partner and giving him the cold gun and all that type of stuff. And Ray's having his issues. And in that fight, it's they cross the streams and there's a big boom. And I loved it. Rory was like, why'd you do that? That's the rules. And Ray's like, well, I thought we, you know, broke the rules. And Rory's like, that's the one rule we follow.
It's the one rule. Yeah, that was awesome. Have we seen the streams come together before for an explosion on any of the CW comic book shows? Or was this the first time? I can't remember, honestly.
They talked about it on Flash at one point in time, I think, but I don't remember if they crossed them. If they did, it would have been their early appearance in season one, I think.
So, listener, if you remember, if they have crossed the streams, Captain Cold and Heatwave?
Yes.
That's his name, Captain Cold and Heatwave. If they had crossed the streams with their guns before, please let us know, because our memories are failing, because we've seen so many comic book shows. So, you had that first White House infiltration, and then you had the standard warehouse fight in the bottom basement of the White House. And I want to talk a little bit about this because I think this is one of the most choreographed fight scenes in all of Legends of Tomorrow, where you actually have several different things going on simultaneously. It's one cut. It didn't last very long, but they wanted to try to make one cut on that scene down in the warehouse. I think they did a pretty good job up to a point where they then had to start doing the cuts. And they obviously, with the wigs and the stunt people and everything, it was like Sarah's fight with the big, huge Russian. That was not even a gal, from what I could tell. That was a guy that was getting thrown around.
But hey, that fight started with the best slow walk to danger zone, like, ever. You know, you got Sarah in that jumpsuit, got, you know, everything. It was, I know that that's a part, but to me, that's part of the fight because it's their entrance. It was spectacular.
Yeah, when they come around the corner and they all fill in left to right and they're all coming down into danger zone, did you notice that when they transitioned from the hallway to the ballroom, that the orchestra was playing a version of Danger Zone?
was amazing.
I didn't remember that. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to finish my rewatch before we recorded this. Now I'm going to have to finish just to see that.
It's awesome. All right, Michelle, you're the time travel Nazi of Starling Tribune. Why don't you break down what's happened? Where did they go and what happened while they were there?
Well, this takes place in 1987 Miami, and all the Miami Vice callbacks, you know, Amaya's wearing shoulder pads. It was something seeing her go to the JSA, and she's like, well, men and women have equal rights by now, right? And I nearly spit out my water when I was watching it the first time, because that's, anyway. So what's interesting is that, again, at that beginning, when Thawne comes and sees Dark, Dark's like, whoa, hey, it's been 45 years. And Thawne's like, well, it's been like snappy, 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 you know, been like 3 minutes for me, like, hey, hey, hey. So that was interesting seeing that difference with Dark's like, hey, it's been almost 50 years. And just that whole like time displacement deal. And the biggest time thing for me is young Stein with older Stein. I love it when older Stein is telling, you know, would somebody please shut me up?
It's a great line, too.
It is. This is like the biggest event that will have ripples. And you don't realize when Stein lectures Stein what that means. And talk about like time aberrations that's going to happen. So there's that. And then the other time issue that I have, I don't know what you guys think about, is it's Sarah, she knows by now not to kill Dark. But she tells him his future.
So it's hero monologuing. It's what it is.
Right. So that must prompt Dark to tell Thawne, hey, I just don't want to be your lackey. You need to take me on this time travel thing because I want to change my destiny. Because this blonde lady who looked the same as like 45 years ago, who I thought might have taken the dip in the Lazarus pit.
Which he has.
Right, but not like he thought she looked the same because of the Lazarus pit, but then he learns that time travel and, oh no, I'm thinking, but isn't that a big, so they're like, there's big, they do big time violations. First off, they make the news. Second, I would say Stein, you know, with Stein, we'll talk about that. And then third would be Sarah telling Dark his future. Isn't that like a no-no as well?
I would think Thawne had the plan to take Dark with him eventually anyway, because the pod was there. It wasn't stuffed somewhere else. Thawne, when he's time traveling, he doesn't take the pod with him. He doesn't need it. He can just do his speedster thing.
He sure didn't seem like he was planning on bringing him originally, though, with the look on his face. He's like, yeah, I'm coming with you. I don't know.
Maybe, maybe not. I think just by the fact that he had the pod there, that he was thinking of taking somebody with him. Because for an item, he can just hold the item. He can't hold the person through time travel. And so eventually he was going to have to do that. I don't know if this was particular time. Either that or it's a plot hole, which, okay, it's Legends of Tomorrow. Thinking, got it.
Because he did need the time ship pod thing in Flash, right?
Yeah.
He did then, yes.
So we're saying that he's improved his time travel ability now?
Yeah, absolutely. He's got more experience with it, and he's learned how to do it. He's gotten a little faster. All speedsters get faster over time. And I think because he's been running from the Wraiths, he's got it down pretty good. You don't have any idea how long he has been running from the Wraiths. This is not he left for the Flash and then boom, he's immediately in Legends Tomorrow. There was a time period there that he was in no man's land and he's running, just popping in and out, and he's fighting the race. He's smart enough now to know he can only stay in one place so far, and then he's got to go. And we know eventually where he goes off to. But right now, we don't, if you're just watching this for the first time.
Right. So we know it's a Thawne, that this Thawne is before he was depowered after his fight with Barry that kicked off the Flash series. It's also a Thawne from before he gets wiped out by Eddie. So he's a Thawne from, oh, I don't even know the right way to phrase this.
He's the one from Flashpoint that Barry, okay, so Oh, dang on it, Barry. Okay, so Barry takes Thawne, prevents him from killing the mom, which creates Flashpoint, takes him into that, keeps him prisoner in Flashpoint. He needs him to go back to fix Flashpoint. So that Thawne that Barry kept captive in Flashpoint is the Thawne we're dealing with.
Right. And this Thawne has never been depowered like the Harrison Wells Thawne had been in season one of Flash. So he's never had that crippling depowering effect that Harrison Wells' version had, where he had to work to get his speed back. And to do that was to manipulate Barry into becoming the Flash sooner. So, oh God, this is making my brain hurt. So this is a Flash from a separate timeline that merged with our timeline for a second, and then got jumped out of the timeline. If you can follow that, your head just exploded. Oh God, I hate time travel.
This show does not deal with it well. It's just simply fun. It's popcorn, and you have to follow it for a little bit, but after that, you just got to say, okay, whatever you guys want out of this. So was there anything else about the time travel, Michelle, that you wanted to point out? There was three things. Did we cover them all?
Well, Stein going against Stein. First off, just to catch everybody up, last season, because this goes back to first season one, where Martin meets Martin, and he ends up sort of, I guess, triggering Martin, the younger Martin Stein, to be a little bit more career-oriented. I mean, he does end up marrying Clarissa, but in this case, he's really ignoring Clarissa even more so than in Stein's original past. And he's actually in the White House. You know, he said like, oh, I was just in meetings. I never made it to the White House. And then here he is at the White House. You know, he didn't take Clarissa out on her birthday, like in Stein's original memory. So what happens is that he's literally got to tell his younger self, yo, get with your wife.
That's right. And he dances with Clarissa, too. Older Stein dances with Clarissa, which I thought was very interesting. It wasn't just the conversation that they were having. There was a romantic moment there. I think for Clarissa, it was just because Martin was ignoring her husband from 1987. But for Stein, this is something that he hasn't had for a long time because he's been doing time travel. They haven't been back to his wife in all very sporadically, like a year and a half, really, that he's been without her. So he's got some longing there.
Yeah.
All right. So there was the Steins. There was the Thawne. Was there a third thing?
Well, we touched on it in the first fight, like how Firestorm rockets out of the White House.
Which is cool.
It was Rocket Man. So thus, definitely setting the stage of where they were filming. It was actually filmed at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue based on that, because we know they have to do that. There's no way to fake that. Computers aren't good enough in 1987 to do that sort of stuff.
Well, see, they actually got on the Wave Rider and went back to 1987 to film this for the show. This is true time travel is how we got it.
Wow, that's like the Deadliest Catch. They have to take a lot of cameras with them in order to do that.
They just took an iPhone.
And a GoPro.
or maybe like Matt Damon on Mars, because they really sent Matt Damon to Mars to shoot The Martian. And they just...
Don't you ruin that for me, SP. Don't you dare.
Sent him with a buttload full of GoPros. Say, okay, when you come back, just bring the storage cars.
No, don't do it.
It is one of my favorite movies. I love it. I just saw it not last weekend, but the weekend before again. I like it. I probably watched that movie more than anything else in the last 2 years. All right. Let's talk about some of the characters. We talked about Sarah Lance, her struggling with being captain. We talked about her vengeance. We talked about Ray Palmer and him getting along with Mick and Mick's head hurting. Let's talk a little bit about the bomb moment in the White House between Mick and Ray.
I love that moment because Ray still, who am I without my suit and everything? And Roy's, of course, still working through losing Snart. And so he's like, you know what? You are not Snart. You're not my partner. You are Ray Palmer. He actually says to him, "You're Ray Palmer. You can science your way out of anything."
To paraphrase The Martian.
Yes, exactly. The Martian right there. And let's talk a little bit about how many times the actors have to shoot scenes. So usually when they shoot a scene, they probably have to put in 5, 7, 10 takes. Mick has to shove. It originally looked like a donut to me, but then it looked like a mini cake. He has to shove a mini cake in his mouth over the course of 5, 7, whatever takes. Probably had to eat a lot of cake this episode.
Unless he had a spit bucket.
Yeah, he could have just been going and spitting out the cake in between. He's got to stay cut, man. You can't eat a bunch of cake and stay cut like him.
Well, what about all the beer he drinks?
Who says that's beer in that bottle?
Oh, that thanks a lot, Chris, for ruining that for me.
Look, SP just ruined The Martian for me. I'm paying it forward.
It's probably water or apple juice or something.
When Ray froze the beer bottles, I didn't see a lot of fizz coming out of it. I think it was all water in there.
Either way, it's not actual beer.
Maybe he likes flat beer. I mean, he's been to prison. You got to drink prison hooch, so it probably changes your taste a little bit.
You know who we haven't talked about so far? We haven't talked about Obsidian.
Oh, it's so cool seeing Lance Hendrickson.
That was cool.
Oh, I wish he was in it more, though. Spoiler alert. This is all you get. So treasure it. It was a subtle nod because they talk about how in 1956, the JSA goes on a mission and they fail. And Obsidian didn't get to go because it's 1956, it's during the Red Scare, and he's homosexual. And that was one of the, just a little history lesson for you children. Back then, being homosexual was considered to be a very compromising, you could be compromised easily, you could be swayed easily, and such. So he was not trusted to go on this mission, and he had to stay, and he's basically it. Like, when you go into that 1987 JSA room, it's all cobwebs, it's broken down, and it's just Tim, and it's broke my heart a little bit.
The best training facility ever.
I don't know. I thought Superhero Fight Club 2.0 was the best training facility ever.
I totally forgot about that. That was an awesome little web series. It wasn't a web series. It was just a little 5-minute teaser. Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to Superhero Fight Club 3.0 when we get that this summer.
That'll be,
you know, it's going to happen.
Be awesome.
You know it.
Yeah. Who won last time? Supergirl?
They didn't end the fight. They got attacked more as it wrapped, I thought.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
More bad guy. They were all back to back. Yeah, that's right. It was cool. I can't wait. Is that still available, like on the CW seed or something?
They put it on their YouTube channel after their exclusive window ran out on the CW app, because that's how they kickstarted the new CW app, to be like, don't forget, you can watch all of our content for free. And before it comes out, here, watch Superhero Fight Club exclusively. Because I remember being at work, and someone sent me a link to a YouTube video that was taken down, and I was like, I can't get to the CW app anywhere here. So I actually went on my phone during my lunch break for like 5 minutes and tried to find a bootleg version on YouTube to watch and couldn't find one.
Yeah, because they were taking those down left and right.
Oh, yeah, like that. As soon as one went up, they pulled it.
I remember you being so mad, and then you had to stay at work late that day. And then when you finally got home, it was like 11 p.m. or something like that. And you're like, oh, my gosh, this is cool. And we're all like, yeah. We've all seen it like 10 times already.
Followed up with me, but we'll go, screw you guys then. I just saw it or something like that. Because I'm mature and grown up.
So we had the Justice Society of America, and then we get a lot more into Vixen and exactly what was going on with her and why she has this regret about leaving.
She said you can't fraternize with somebody else. So it looks like they were together, but not together, but they had plans to run away together after the war and such. So,
yep.
They had unresolved sexual tension.
They did. And it explains why she left everybody to come take out the Legends of Tomorrow.
Why she was so mad is because they were more than friends. Whether they had actually moved on that, there was what's the right word I'm looking for here? The connection between them or something like that. Sorry, I was having a weird brain fart there, guys.
So I thought it was very interesting, the conversation that Vixen had with Steele in the library, because they were talking about relationships. And then if you fast forward just, I don't know, five episodes or whatever, you see what becomes of those characters on screen. I just thought it was definitely interesting. I wonder if they knew exactly what those characters were going to evolve into when they filmed that scene. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
See, I don't know that they did, because let me put on my shipper cap for a second that a lot of people wear when they watch CW shows. It almost seemed like they were trying to position her and Mick together for a while there, beyond just being friends. And maybe I was reading way too much into it, but that was the impression I'd gotten on it. So then when the thing with Steele happened, I was like, huh, I didn't really see that coming.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be her and Mick as well, especially, you know, when she got the ninja star for him. I was like, oh, this is going to be the start of a beautiful something. It's Mick. Who knows? Because it's like, she's like, your grandpa liked to sing and all this type of stuff. So when they get together, it's kind of, that's your friend's grandson.
Yeah, it's a little creepy, you know, that I think about it.
Well, it's the same thing that happened with Captain America and Agent 13.
That was creepy, too. I said as much.
Yeah, very creepy.
All right. Well,
just like I still find it creepy that Barry and Iris are together after growing up in the same house calling Joe dad.
Well, but that's not how it went in the comics, so we're all okay with that.
Okay, fine.
I was just searching for something. Anyway, I'm out. Chris, you got anything?
I can't think of anything else right now, no.
All right. Michelle, take us out.
For next week?
What do you have left to say about the episode?
You know, it's interesting. When I first watched this episode, I didn't realize just how many ripples it started. Because now when I rewatched it, it was like, oh, this is, you know, Stein versus Stein. Stein's lecture to himself leads to a big event later on down the season. Like that, it was like, oh, that's where this happened. And that's why it happened. And so it's very interesting rewatching these, really seeing how it plays out for the rest of the season.
Looking back, this is a very pivotal episode, and I was shocked when I went back to watch it again. Of course, we might say that next week as well. When Michelle, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to be watching next week?
Well, next week, it's the Legends of Tomorrow episode 6 of season 2 called Outlaw Country. It originally aired Thursday, November 17th, 2016. And the legends find Jonah Hex in trouble with his arch nemesis, Quentin Turnbull, when they arrive in the Old West. So Jonah Hex came back. Director Shereen Nolan and writers Matthew Mala and Chris Fedak.
Chris Fedak of the Chuck fame, and did notice his name as one of the executive producers on this episode in the starting credits. So that's it for the episode. We're going to move on to the weekly DC news. From the Starling Tribune news desk, we're going to talk a little bit about Oliver and Felicity. Michelle, what do you got to say?
Well, Stephen Amell first teased the Felicity-centric episode last month, tweeting that he was filming the first episode ever where the same actor shares every single one of my scenes with me. Going to be great. Steven added, and by my scenes, I mean our scenes by definition. Super cool episode. Amell was referring to season 5, episode 20, which is titled Underneath, airs during May sweeps and Roy visit in depth Felicity's termination of their wedding engagement after learning that Oliver, 1, had a son, 2, didn't tell her, and 3, then didn't include his bride-to-be in the decision to send young William and his mother away to safety. Which, you were just the fiancé, you're not the mom, you're not the stepmom, you had no say in it whatsoever. And that last part was me adding my thoughts to that moment. I'm sorry, she had no right to be angry. Okay, fine. He didn't, the tell not telling of the son part, I can get kind of. But the whole her not being a part of the decision making, she had nothing to do with it. She's just the fiance.
It's a very delicate relationship issue, because you are going to be in a marital relationship. So basically everything is shared, and don't go back to Moira Queen and Robert Queen and think that was a healthy marriage, because it was not. But I think Elicity has a little bit of something to stand on there, but you're probably, I don't know. It's a very delicate time because they're not married yet. She is just the fiance. Michelle's right. All right. So once, now that we've determined that Michelle is right.
You sounded so resigned when you're like, oh, Michelle's right. Is it really that hard to say?
No, it's just, I was like, oh, I've had this in my mind that it's not too much to ask to be included in the decisions that your spouse has made. No matter who that spouse is, you married that person.
First off, they're not married. And this is the son's safety. Okay, look, as someone as, okay, I'm a child of divorced parents. And my dad, when he was going to get remarried, he wanted me to call this woman mom. And it's like, I've known her 3 minutes. It's like, no. So if you need to realize that, you know, Ollie's the dad, and then there's the mom, and then Felicity, she needed to realize, I'm not the mom, I'm not even the stepmom yet. The parents know what's best for the son. She needed to have realized that and accepted it and not made a big deal out of it.
Would it be better okay for you if we had Chris call me mom?
Of course.
Okay, there you go, Chris.
Steven is Big Papa, and I can call you Big Mama now.
No, but okay.
It's too late. It sticks. It sticks. I have approved it. It is decided.
All right. Since you're deciding things, why don't you get onto one of your favorite subjects and talk about American Ninja Warrior?
Yes. Let's talk about that. So a while back, I can't even remember how long ago it was, Stephen Amell had expressed on Twitter an interest in being involved in American Ninja Warrior. And we all know, starting back in season one, Stephen Amell can rock him some salmon ladder action.
Mm-hmm.
He's done it. He's badass on the salmon ladder. He's and he just can nail it. So can the actress who plays Sarah Lance as well, whose name escapes me all of a sudden. But he has wanted to be involved in American Ninja Warrior. He's also been involved in professional wrestling. So Stephen Amell can do some stunts. So here's some interesting news coming courtesy of TV Guide. American Ninja Warrior announces a celeb edition with Stephen Amell. American Ninja Warrior announced its first ever celebrity edition, and the cast is pretty nuts. Arrow's Stephen Amell will trade in his salmon ladder for the floating steps and compete against Dancing with the Stars, Derek Hough, Parenthood's Erica Christensen, Today's Natalie Morales, and comedian Nikki Glaser, and also actress Mina Suvari, former Yankees player Nick Swisher, comedian Jeff Dye, and Olympic decathlon and heptathlon champion Ashton Eaton. They'll kick off on Thursday, May 25th on NBC. And here's what's getting really cool on that too. They're pairing all of these celebrities up with an American Ninja Warrior star to be their coach throughout this. Stephen Amell's coach is Casey Catanzaro. I saw on there.
I was really revved up as you were reading all these names saying, oh, Stephen Amell's got this in the bag. He's going to win. He's going to be great. And then you get to Olympic decathlon and heptathlon champion Ashton Eaton. I was like, Steven's got a little bit of work to do.
Have you watched American Ninja Warrior in the past, SP?
A little bit. My son just loved to watch it when he was at home.
So they've had Olympians on there before and professional athletes, and this is very different than the kind of work they do from day to day. So Stephen Amell has a little bit of an advantage in the fact that his workouts, as we saw in his workout videos, are a little parkour based, and he does salmon ladders. He does trick jumps and jumps off of ledges and has to bounce off of things. So he's got a little experience in doing that. I think if you coach him up, he could make a pretty decent run on it. Of course, I probably just gave him the kiss of death and he's going to fall immediately now. And if that's the case, I'm sorry, Steven.
I just hope he doesn't get hurt, because that would be not good. Not good at all.
Well, that's why they're filming it. Well, that's why they're doing it in May. So he'll probably go film as soon as they're done with this season of Arrow. So if the worst would happen, he has time to heal up, I suppose. He is dealing with a back injury, he said on Twitter before.
Back injuries are not fun, I should know, because I've had to go through it very long. As you get older, he's a lot younger than me, though, so maybe he'll bounce back easy. I don't know. Another thing that we need to talk about, in addition to the extreme physical prowess of some of the actors as well as the stunt team, is the CGI portion of these shows. Just in this show alone, we didn't talk about it, but Steel was getting his steel on and off and on and off during a fight. That was interesting to watch. And of course, you have Firestorm that just merges and goes for it, and the cold gun and the heat gun as well. And that was in Legends of Tomorrow. If you go over to another show that is effects heavy, like Supergirl, you just got to wonder, how are they able to do this on a TV budget? Michelle, can you shed any light on this?
Yeah, over on bleedingcool.com, they have an article, How the Supergirl Effects Team Brought Parasite to Life. The CW released a video showing the visual effects for the Parasite episode Supergirl from earlier this season. The episode was called Changing. It was the sixth episode of the season and featured scientist Rudy Jones becoming the classic DC villain. It also showed us both Mon-El and Guardian in action after Supergirl and John Jones were drained by Parasite. There's no dialogue or sound in the video, but you actually see the different layers. They show like the computer modeling. They show like how, like the stand-ins that they have, and then they show laying the computer animation over it and then adding all the dimensional layers and stuff. It's a really cool look of like what they do. And especially on a TV timeline, it's really impressive.
If you haven't checked it out, I would encourage you to go check it out. This filmmaking today is very impressive, what they're able to pull off in the timelines and the budgets that they have. So, Chris, we are predominantly a show on the CW show Arrow, as you just regaled the story of Stephen Amell on American Ninja Warrior. Let's get back into the show itself. Is there any future news for any of the episodes coming up?
So there is. They actually gave away the synopsis for Dangerous Liaisons, which, if I recall correctly, is one of the very first episodes we get back after this mini break. And guys, it sounds really good. According to synopsis, the next episode of Arrow Season 5 says, Oliver, Team Arrow, Argus, and the SPCD kick off a citywide manhunt for Adrian Chase. Helix tells Felicity they have a way to find Chase, but they need something big and illegal from her in return. Joel Novoa directed the episode, written by Speedweed and Elizabeth Kim.
Speedweed!
I'm super excited. They left us on a good cliffhanger for Arrow, so I'm really excited to see where they go from here, and Joshua Segura is nailing it as Adrian Chase, so that's part of my fun, is seeing what he does with that character next.
It's such a beautiful morning when he plays Adrian Chase.
I see what you did there.
There you go. Now, this gets into something that we've talked about before. If you want to hear more about it, go listen to episode 146, 145, 144 of the Starling Tribune, where we really talk about where Felicity is with Helix and not really liking where the character is. So this episode, I think, will be pivotal in moving whatever arc storyline that they have there forward. And I hope they get it resolved, because it's one that I'm quite just personally not really interested in it. Michelle, what are you looking forward to in this episode?
I think it's interesting that they're going to bring Argus, so I'm hoping they bring in Lila, because if it's Argus, and then I always like it when she comes along, and then with her and John, you know, the Diggles in action. It's always fun watching that.
I want Sarah back. Sarah Diggle. Dang it, Barry.
Way to go, Barry. Jeez.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Barry.
So as you can tell, we have definite strong opinions on several of the characters in the CW family of shows, I guess is one way to call it. And talking about families of shows, we're on a family of networks of other geeky shows, right, Chris?
That is right. We do like to remind folks that the Starling Tribune is a part of the Gunna Geek Network. There's 19 different podcasts on there right now, I think, that cover a variety of geeky things. Sometimes it's geeky TV shows, geek culture, an in-depth look into different events in life and how that can tie back to geeky things. There's all sorts of stuff. I did a terrible job of describing it there, but go to gunnageek.com, click on the network button, go and find some of the awesome stuff that's there. And I do want to highlight one specific episode. It is slightly shameless self-promotion because it's one I'm on. I want to talk to you guys about episode 254 of the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, entitled Technically R-Rated. And why I wanted to bring that one up is we just had a bunch of pretty funny April Fool's pranks, and as part of the fallout from April Fool's Day, I run down the best and worst pranks that were on the internet. Meanwhile, Naki gives some details on Joss Whedon potentially doing a Batgirl movie, Willie talks all about the new movie trailers that dropped last week, and there were a lot of them, and Anthony has the news on how Valiant Comics is now getting into the movie game.
Nice.
Yeah, it's blowing up that whole comic book movie thing. Who'd have thought that bubble wouldn't have popped by now, right?
It's been a long time. Like, where would you, I don't know if you guys talked about it in ATGM, but where would you define the start of the modern comic book movie bubble?
X-Men.
Iron Man.
Yeah, that I'd go Iron Man for the what's currently out there right now. But you're right, X-Men, a lot of people consider that. And the problem is there's a disparity of, what, 8 years between those two movies?
Six, I think. But there was also X2 that came in before that also. So really, X2, if you want to, well, personally, my opinion would be go back to the X-Men and the Raimi Spider-Man movies. And that's what kicked off this generation of comic book movies we have now. Because it was, oh, that can't happen. Spider-Man 1 came out, it was so-so. Spider-Man 2 rocked it. And then you had the X-Men movies. I really wanted to say Nolan's Batman movies, but no one really thinks of them as comic book movies.
No, I mean, I think we've had this discussion on this podcast before. Superman, in my opinion, was the first real start of the comic book movie in the modern day. But I think the multi-million-dollar blockbuster, I think, was Iron Man that really started it. But you're right, X-Men did really good stuff.
See, I don't think you would have gotten an Iron Man movie, because remember, that was a big risk at the time, because Marvel took what was a tier 3 comic book character and made it into a movie, made bank. And had you not had the success of X-Men and Spider-Man, Marvel wouldn't have gone, God, we need to get into this movie game, what character do we have that we can use, and said, well, how about this Iron Man character? If we can get someone big to play the role, which they did in Robert Downey Jr., and then look how that reinvigorated his career, that kicked them off. I don't think they ever would have thought about the movies unless they had had the success of their properties that they didn't own as movies.
Yeah, but I think with Iron Man, like you said, he was a third tier. And if you think about it, I mean, then they went on to Thor, but then you also have other comic book properties coming, like that, like they were sort of like going, well, if this tier could work, well, maybe this independent stuff could do, and maybe that could do. And I think that's, for me, the bubble, it got just huge with that, because I think that really signaled where it all could go. Instead of just doing your typical, everybody knows who Spider-Man and everybody X-Men, they could start exploring all these different characters that people might not have heard of. My mom had never heard of Thor before the movie, and that still worked, so.
That's fair.
I don't think we're going to solve this debate right now, but I am going to throw this out to our listeners. So, listener, if you have anything to say about what you think about the start of the comic book movie blockbusters, please get a hold of us on our voicemail line at 612-888-CAVE or 612-888-2283. We have a Facebook page. We have our Twitter account, which Michelle does a great job live tweeting. That's at Starling Tribune. Or you can always hit me up on email, StargatePioneer@GunnaGeek.com.
Well, guys, I think that is time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to everyone who did watch live on DC TV or Geeks.live. Also, a big thank you to anyone that has downloaded the episodes at a later date or watched the replays on YouTube, Spreaker, or any of the other websites we've tried to spread our disease that is the Starling Tribune to.
We're a disease now. I thought we were just a successful newspaper over on Earth 2.
We're a virus. We're spreading like a virus is more what I tried to get to, and I flubbed it. I'm sorry, guys. This is why I write things.
A helpful virus.
You say virus, and I think of Contagion, and that was not a very good movie. Scared the crap out of me. Anyway, if you've missed out on all of this live, you too can join us in our live chat room like Steven did this week. That is 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on geeks.live. That's actually a domain, www.geeks.live.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show in the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate all those 5-star reviews on iTunes. Like us on Facebook and YouTube, and badger us on Twitter.
So, great episode, guys. That about wraps it up for this week. Any last words before we sign off and say our goodbyes at the Chris Farrell?
Hashtag Big Mama SP.
At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag equality shoulder pads.
And I'm at Stargate Pioneer saying hashtag danger zone. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.